Last week, as we saw the so-called grand bargain 2.0 play out without success ultimately, I know there were some number of individuals, I'd probably count myself among them, with dashed hopes. Some of the reports had been coming over the course of a number of days that, there were some agreements that were getting made across some of the reform areas, that budget numbers continued to get exchanged and progress was making there. But ultimately, as it yet again came apart, we're in a position now, at least talking as a group of state universities, that we're still going to need to have some sort of appropriation to bridge us through the summer and into fall. And having spent at least one day up there this last week and having discussions beyond that, I will continue to say that I do believe our elected officials, certainly our representatives and senators in the Illinois General Assembly, acknowledge, understand that we're not going to be able to go through the coming 3-4 months without having some sort of infusion of state cash. And the vehicle by which that would happen, if there is no agreement ultimately on a budget, the timing for such, et cetera, is a pay grade well above me. But if all of our public officials think that we're going to just be able to kind of roll merrily along until fall tuition money starts coming in, that's not going to be the case. And of course, there's also the issue of the K-12 schools, who this year, heading into the 17-18 academic term, as they will be preparing for that over the summer, do not have an appropriation either. So if it's not a budget, if it's not a full agreement, there's going to have to be some sort of train leaving the station with state support on it to cover the schools and allow them to open. Because I think if there's anything that's agreed by among all parties in every chamber, no matter who the elected official is, school has to start. And as that train pulls out of the station, higher ed intends to be on it.
U of I's president came out and said that people with an interest in higher education need to stop urging a budget and need to demand a budget. Does that signal any change, in your mind, coming from the flagship institution of the state?
Well, I'm glad to hear President Colleen sharing that sentiment in a a fairly bold way. Although I think there have been some number of us who have been saying this now as well for some number of months, and for whatever reason, the clarion call maybe hasn't been quite heard and picked up on. Especially if you look at a couple of our sister institutions in the state of Illinois that are in very dire situations, I think they've probably been issuing the same pronouncement as President Colleen at the U of I. I certainly have been trying to do that, but for whatever reason, it hasn't resonated sufficiently where, and I'm being now tongue in cheek, Jennifer, where people are lighting the torches and picking up their pitchforks and saying, this has to get solved for the benefit of our universities, to keep them from crumbling apart, being dismantled, and the economic power that they bring to these cities that they're located in. For whatever reason, we don't have a response to that clarion call. Some would suggest that maybe part of the reason is that many of our constituencies haven't felt the difficulty. By baling wire and bubble gum, we've kept things going. We continue to fund MAP money. We haven't turned off that spigot for our need-based students, and we don't want to. These are access dollars that allow kids to go to school. Obviously, we sit here so concerned about the future of WSIU and public broadcasting. Maybe people understand it if they don't hear Morning Edition when they turn on their radios in the morning. Do we have to resort to things like that? And it's already taking place around the campuses, and people who have these areas of service and work that we do that's valued, they're seeing that start to happen in small ways. It's going to continue to happen in bigger ways. And I guess there's a part of me that's a little discouraged that we haven't had greater impact by people doing exactly what Tim Colleen has called for. But if this thing doesn't turn around, every few days is going to be one more thing that people are going to be used to having as part of SIU that they're not going to see. And if that's where we end up having to go, if there's no state support forthcoming. And if that's what it takes for people to understand the criticality of where we are right now and this cliff we're on the precipice of in the state system of higher education, then I guess maybe we go a few more weeks and we start seeing more and more happen and people finally rise up and say it's got to stop.
Changing gears just a little bit, we're still on a financial topic, but we spent a lot of time talking about this borrowing plan that has passed the Board of Trustees from Edwardsville to the Carbondale campus. There was a lot of pushback from faculty and staff at Edwardsville over this plan. How much of your time is being spent now on fence mending and making sure that these campuses work together and stay together as a system?
You know, it's a great question, and I like the way you characterize that. I am trying to spend some time on fence mending and being present at Edwardsville and acknowledging the concerns that have been stated since this notion of doing an interfund loan from Edwardsville reserves to Carbondale for operations, a short-term borrowing, we anticipate, since really formulating that plan back in late March, now a couple of months ago. And really, again, many of our listeners know this. This was the only place we had to turn for SIU Carbondale. It's not something anyone wanted to do. There was no desire to put SIUE in a box or in harm's way whatsoever, and do not believe this borrowing of about half of their reserves does this in any way at all. But I understand the frustration that's out there and have tried to be responsive to that and talk the various constituencies through it. I think one thing that helped do some of that healing and show the responsiveness of the board was that when the Board of Trustees ultimately acted to do that borrowing, you'll recall that there was an initial proposal. It was held off for a subsequent meeting. That meeting was held now a couple of weeks ago. So at the meeting where it was formally approved unanimously by the trustees, there was some changing of that motion. There was a fixed dollar amount in terms of the unrestricted reserves. There was a clear codification in the board's action, in the motion they passed, that said the very first payback of Carbondale, once we start getting a state budget again, operating funding, and no, we didn't say it had to be a complete budget back to the normal days. It's just when we have what's called a state budget again, that and Carbondale could stabilize operations, the first payback had to be to Edwardsville. We addressed the interest question in there. So I do think that when Edwardsville saw that the board took seriously those initial concerns and built them into the revised motion, that helped. But now I think it may be, if I can characterize it this way, a matter of trust but verify. I think Edwardsville, and talking to a lot of people there, they want to see that Carbondale is going to be aggressive on doing a financial sustainability plan. The work that, to be honest, we've kicked the can down the road on some cost cutting and streamlining at Carbondale. The folks at Edwardsville want to see that's going to take place. They want to know that we know, and when I say we, senior leadership of the system, the board members, and others in Carbondale of leadership influence, understand how seriously they view this, and take it, and are going to be watching carefully. Be even more concerned if we would have to replay this scenario. So I think it's just going to take time for people to understand this is the strength of being in a system. And if we don't have that strength, both campuses suffer. And at some point, too, I think people have to realize, and maybe somewhat in Edwardsville with those who have been most vocal or strident about this, this really is the board asking itself for permission to use its own money. It is, I would remind everyone, one university budget, one financial accounting system, one system audit. Borrowing is done as if we're talking about going out and trying to get bonds sold or something. Bond issuance, as an example, is done as a system. It's never an individual campus. So even though we track sub-budgets by the three main campuses, this is still a system budget, and the board is well within their authority to make exactly these types of determinations. That said, I understand, because it's new ground for us, that there was frustration and, you know, surprise. And so, you know, we have to be able to talk about that and bring people to understanding of the rationale and the authority that exists for it and that type of thing.
You mentioned leadership and making, you know, the changes that are going to be necessary to take Carbondale into the next phase.
Right.
And we're on hold when it comes to this search for a chancellor.
Yes.
I wonder your reaction to the board's decision to pull in two more finalists and talk to them, talk to all of them now directly, and where do we stand? Is there still, you know, this cloud of uncertainty over Carbondale?
Well, you know, I don't know that it's the cloud of uncertainty over Carbondale driven by, you know, the state budget impasse and that type of thing. As much as it is for our trustees, they really do understand this is possibly the most significant, not just hiring action, but this could be the most significant action this board takes for a long, long time. And they're very serious about it. They're absolutely committed to doing everything that they feel they need to do to get this right. So in terms of indicating that they'd like to have an opportunity to sit with all of these folks and take their own stock of them and do their own interview with each of the finalists, that's something that we had talked about from the get-go with the board, that if there was a mixture of opinion or the campus seemed to be in a couple of different places, that one of the outcomes could be at the board level then, and the board is the body doing the hire, obviously, that they could bring these individuals in front of them and spend some time together and fulfill that role that ultimately they have to make the best choice. The addition of the two finalists for the chancellorship was not something anticipated going into that 3-hour closed session a couple of weeks ago to hear the recommendations and vet out the candidates with the board itself. But again, to their credit, at that point, remember, we'd already had one candidate who was named as a finalist, Dr. Elwell, who had withdrawn. We had been talking salary levels broadly with the other three finalists who were early on named, had been talking salary with them, and knew there was going to be a concern with one of those three. Ultimately, that individual, Dr. Pinkert, who had applied from the University of Alabama, withdrew, took himself out of the running. Now, the board didn't know that at the time, but they were privy to the fact that this was going to be an issue for at least one of those three, based upon the discussions that I had had with the finalists. So, coming to two remaining finalists from that original group, the board took into account the fact that the search committee did its work well and had a couple of other individuals who they felt very strongly about, who they had rated highly in their internal review. But because I had limited the number to some degree, I said, we're not going to bring 7 or 8 people to campus as finalists. So they had to make a choice. And once we had lost two out of the original finalist pool, and it was shared with the board, the fact that the search committee did have a couple of other candidates who they felt very strongly about, but we were out of slots and they were not advanced, that then led to a discussion about, well, maybe we need to go back and look at them, solicit their continued interest, have some discussion, and if they're willing to come up at, shall we say, this late date in the search and kind of after the fact, if they're still interested and willing, maybe we need to do that. And obviously, based upon that and our talking to them, we've added these two additional candidates. It is important, I believe, that we have to have them go through generally the same paces with the campus visits. And since summer school isn't starting until Monday the 12th, the thinking was we better try to just pause, do those two additional finalist visits as soon as we can that week, and then roll from there into a special board meeting later that week where all the finalists, the two remaining from the original pool and the two added, would come together and do their board interviews. Now, that's not to say there'll be a hire done coming out of that, because depending on how it plays out, there could be some contract discussions that we need to nail down, could be some background checking we need to do, et cetera, before doing any kind of naming. But yes, while it's been a little hitch in the get along, as we say, things will continue and we're going to get this done. And I can say I don't think all that we've got going on has been a detriment, because we've got four really fine finalists if you look at all of the credentials on those individuals.